Welcome to Automates, the podcast that brings you musings from thought leaders and industry pioneers who are shaping the way we work, think, and succeed. Each episode is packed with insights, expert interviews, and practical tips that will inspire and empower you to take your business to the next level. So tune in, subscribe, and get ready to innovate with Automates. So, Greg, hi, how are you?
I'm doing great, Ben. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure to have somebody like you on my little podcast. I say my little podcast, it's not mine, but it's generally my kind of face. But yeah. There are lots of people who work behind the scenes to make this happen.
Yeah, but you're the face of it, and so really that's all that matters, right?
Exactly. I mean, they did say because of my face, it's best place for radio, but you know, It's one of those things. Yeah. Greg, I've known you. I think I first got introduced to you in 2013 or 2014. At an ILTACON event by a mutual friend, Ryan McLeod. And since then, we've had a number of conversations, but I've never really dug into your background. I know enough about you to be dangerous.
Yeah, but yeah, me too. Me too.
So why don't we start off with a bit of an introduction, and then we can dive into some topics that I'm sure everyone's going to find really insightful.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to apologize for anything Ryan may have said. So let's just start right there.
Let's start. We both know Ryan too well that we should not be apologizing for anything Ryan has said or done in the past.
That's true. We can only take our responsibility for ourselves. We definitely can't take responsibility for anything Ryan McLeod does.
No, definitely not.
Although I will say he did marry up. So Kate Boyd, who's wonderful, has been on the podcast a couple of times for me, and she's actually stepped in when Marlene's had a conflict and hosted the podcast a couple of times with me as well. So, the best thing about Ryan is the people that he associates with, I guess. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, enough about Ryan. A little bit about me, background. So I am the Chief Knowledge Services Officer at Jackson Walker. It's a 500-plus attorney firm, Am Law 200, although we have great aspirations. I think we're like 106 right now. So, you're right on that cusp. And we're Texas only, which is great if you're managing people, because you get everyone in one state, one tax system, one time zone. It's the little things that make managing people great. The logistics of being in one state is fantastic. And then I co-founded the Three Geeks in a Law blog with Toby Brown and Lisa Salazar back in 2007, 2008, somewhere around there.
The first post goes back to the something like July 2008. I looked at it.
Thank you. Because I can never remember if it's 2007 or 8. But it was, one of those periods of time where I think everyone was starting a blog. Yep. We had just a great time. And I think I was talking with, what's his name at another podcaster. I'll think of it here in a minute. And he said that it was actually probably the first legal operations blog, and we didn't know what legal operations were at the time. But we had marketing people, we had pricing people, we had KM people, it was basically the administrative side of large law firms and legal business. So it was a lot of fun. And then in 2018, 2018, Marlene Gebauer and I spun off of the podcast, or off of the blog. We did a podcast called the the Geek and Review, and we've done that for 6.5 years. I think we just put out episode 279, something
you
like that.
When I started doing this, I started doing research on everyone else. So yeah, 279 is the 20th of June, 2018. Your first guest was Zena,
yep.
Another good friend, mutual yeah. friend. I think one of the things about we'll come back to Jackson Walker because that pays money. This is fun stuff.
This costs money.
Exactly. But I remember in 2008, 2009, I was a business analyst / project manager for a UK-based law firm, and I was sort of active on Twitter, if that makes sense, from 2006, 2007 onwards. Mm-hmm. And I used to followed the blog posts, and I sort of it was one of my go-to places to just get insight and sort of knowledge, because I wasn't going to conferences like ILTACON from the UK. I wasn't doing any of that until 2013 sort of time. But it was like one of those things that, okay, how do I broaden my knowledge? How can I get access to information? How can I sort of broaden that understanding of the difference between UK, US markets, what's happening, everything else? And it was one of my, I think it was one of my five things that I suggested people go and read, because it was just, and it continues to be one of the places where I sort of refer newbies into the industry, right? Make sure you follow these people, look at these things, and listen to this stuff. So,
well, it's, you know, this is a great community because there is a lot of sharing of information. And quite frankly, it's easy to share information because this is something that Ryan and I talk about a lot, is that, you know, I could give you step-by-step instructions of how we implement technology or process here at my firm. And it would be a great kind of overview, but not something that you could actually implement, because how every organization and every law firm works is different. Yeah. And the environment's different, the culture's different, the tools are different. And so it just kind of lends to the ability to share without feeling like you're giving away, you know, some kind of, trade secrets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I think, you know, very rarely do you get to a conference where someone, and I've seen it before, but it's few and far between, where someone says, oh, well, I can't share this with you because, you know, it's a secret. Everyone, you know, if somebody does that, that means that they're blowing smoke up some part of your body.
Yeah. So. 100%. But I think it's one of those things that you sort of mentioned, that this community is sort of, it's something that I've really found myself leaning into, because it's one of those things that you sort of, over the years, and we've both been in the industry for a sort of a chunk of time. On the vendor side, I think I've been in since 2012, before that 10 years, but you sort of, You might be competitors, you might be a prospect, you might be a client, you might be somebody you've never met before, but you're having a chat over a drink at the end of a day at ILTA or whatever. And everyone's so open. Everyone's nice and chilled. There isn't really any, there are egos, but there isn't any sort of pronounced sort of challenge to it, because I think that everyone's going through quite a lot of change at the moment, particularly in the last couple of years. I mean, 2008, sort of there was economic side of things.
Yeah.
Everyone hunkered down for 2 to 5 years. Then innovation, sort of innovation and the rise of what I would call KM rather than just innovation, and the leveraging of knowledge and stuff, sort of started to rise 2015, whatever it might be. And now we're in the land of generative AI and everything else. But I think, it's one of those things that the community is going through so much change at the moment. And I think practitioners and sort of experts like you, balancing the bridge between what a lawyer needs and what a lawyer expects, and what the business needs or the firm needs and the firm expects from a compliance regulatory standpoint, and the balance of everything is definitely a challenge, I think. And everyone sort of needs to lean on each other, not give away trade secrets, but ultimately sort of start to see how things we can cut through stuff. It's sort of, it's one of those things that I sort of see quite a lot at the moment. With regards to Jackson Walker, what's your exact role? And you talk about being Texas only, and it's easy to manage people in sort of single time zones and everything else, but how big's the team? What does it look after? What are the things that you're focused on at the moment?
Yeah, so my day-to-day is I manage the library, the research, the knowledge team, the conflicts and intake team.
Okay.
And so it's kind of the island of misfit toys, all the departments that no one else wanted to manage. But it's fantastic because you got great people, huge amounts of experience. I mean, I've got one person that's been at the firm for 30 years.
Oh wow!
And knows where all of the bodies are buried, but. Also, I've got newer people that we brought on. So I have a cadre of what we call research attorneys. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of the flip side of what you would see with practice support or KM attorneys, where those tend to be very subject matter experts. A research attorney team tends to be much more generalist so that they can work with attorneys in marketing or whatever across a wide spectrum of resources, expectations. And so it's a great team. I have five research attorneys. Hopefully next year I will have six research attorneys. We'll see if my boss is listening. I need that job approved. Then on top of that, we run a library team. Typically, the library anymore is more the online resources. Not to say print is dead, but typically, if we ever have an office renovation or we move, print is the first thing that goes away, and it gives us a good opportunity to transition the attorneys over to the online resources. And it's just, I wouldn't say it's easier to manage, but it's it allows us to manage these things without being in a particular location.
Yep.
Where the print, you have to be in a location. And then the conflicts team is very interesting in that everyone should know this, but it's one of those things that I think goes on, but people don't really think about it. Conflicts are the people that prevent or litigators from showing up to court and looking across the desk and seeing another Jackson Walker attorney on the other side. and it's not just for new clients or new matters, but one of the things that this team does is also because the recruiting of lateral attorneys is so hot and heavy right now. There's a lot of issues with conflicts when you're bringing in new groups, new people. And it's interesting because it's not just, let's say we bring in an attorney from another firm. It's not just the work that attorney has done, but it may also be work that firm has done, which may not even be related to the attorney, but could cause an issue. So it's, that is a really interesting process to where it's like, you get a puzzle that comes in pieces and then maybe missing a couple of pieces. So you have to go out and search, where do those pieces go? The team that handles that is underappreciated and overworked, but they do valuable work that the firm
I talk to clients and sort of prospects about conflicts and the role of that and how you onboard new customers and all that sort of stuff, clients. And it's one of those things that it's, and this is going to sound terrible, it's almost like, Yeah, and then it gets conflict checked, and then we move on to something else, and then we do something else. How important is the conflict check? Oh, yeah, but it gets done, and we check.
We're the yada 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 of the story.
Yeah, so. And it's but I think you look at it, particularly. I can imagine it being really challenging for you guys in a single state. Where, I mean, is your business predominantly based where you're not doing sort of?
Yeah, we service a lot of out-of-state clients as well. But, you know, I would say a good chunk of our work is in Texas. And, yeah. You know, it's a pretty tight community, both on the litigation and transactional side of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you bring in somebody from a competing firm, there's going to be conflicts. And so it's a matter of identifying those, making sure that the people that need to know do know about it. If there's ethical walls that need to be set up, which is actually a brand new thing in Texas. We couldn't have ethical walls until this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a lot of people, including attorneys here at the firm, didn't know that because they would go, oh, you know, that's easy. Just put an ethical wall up. And we had a general counsel who's since retired, but he basically had a stock email that replied, you know, there are no such things as ethical walls in Texas. And so
run through
that educational process. But when you're telling the story, yeah, we brought in this guy, he had this, you know, or this woman that had this book of business, and, you know, we went through the conflicts, yada yada yada, and then, you know, we brought him on. So it's an important piece, but not necessarily one you want to get into great detail to discuss.
Definitely not. So your research attorneys, they're sort of, are you managing tech then as well as sort of doing the day-to-day, or is tech another side of the?
So it depends. The way it kind of works here is if it's an external piece, so Westlaw, Lexis, even some, you know, if it's an online kind of SaaS-based system, that typically falls under me. If it gets installed on your computer, then the IT team does that. And so it's a matter of, you know, working with them to, you know, making sure that we have the tools that we need, that we're not overbuying in some areas and under buying in other areas. So it takes a lot of communication to determine, you know, what really works. And so, you know, a lot of times there's things, you might buy a Lexis product, but that Lexis product has a plugin for Word, right? Or another, then all of a sudden that's not mine anymore. That's, it has to go over to IT, and it can really cause some, confusion on, especially on the vendor side, because they're used to doing me, then they get to one part and I'm like, okay, I'm going to need to stop to you and refer you to this other person over here, yeah, team. We have this emerging technologies committee, which is, mm-hmm, made up of a number of attorneys and staff, the CMO, the CIO, myself, and others are on that and kind of direct that. So any new technology that comes in really needs to be kind of vetted through this committee.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a triad at the top that kind of decides what it is that we'll look at, pass it off to the committee. If we need to do pilots, things like that, we'll typically use that committee to test it because it has a diverse group of attorneys and practices. Mm-hmm. And it's also the people that we know typically will actually do things during a trial. You've never gone through a 30-day trial and looked at the usage reports and it's zero, right? You've never had that happen.
No, not with Autologics. Yeah. No.
So it's a great, I think for us, it's a great way to look at it, just because there are so many things that are popping up on the market, and there might be an attorney that you know, see something or a vendor reaches out to them. And it's nice that we can give them a pathway of, you know, rather than doing some kind of shadow IT going on, this enables us to really kind of streamline the process, make sure that the, you know, the number one thing is it's got to pass the security ops folks, so you know it gets the ball rolling in that area, and then once we get past security ops, then the rest of the process can begin.
I think it's interesting you've called it emerging technologies, because I mean I think we were chatting just before the podcast started, but it's sort of I've spoken to a couple of people in your kind of position in US and UK firms who are almost paralyzed by the number, the plethora of sort of services, solutions, startups, things that are out there that are going to change lawyers' lives and sort of everything else. And
you sort of meet them where they're working. That's my favorite one.
Yeah, Outlook add-ins are the way forward. but it's sort of as a buyer of tech. I mean, obviously, you've got budgets for your tried and tested, your established, your products, your services that you've got. You've already talked about sort of the balance between sort of core IT and what happens and stuff that you look after. But everything these days is SaaS-based or some kind of subscription service that's accessible through a URL. Autologix is too, by the way. You know, but the I don't normally do that. I don't know why I did it. Sorry. But the challenge is that everyone's sort of running now. Vendors are running, firms are running, and I think those that are running at the moment are creating a pathway for others to follow closely and learn and understand. But I think that I sort of joke sometimes that there's so much noise out there. It must be really hard as a buyer without sort of a core pathway like an emerging tech team and everything else to really understand and then really make the most of the investment that you might be making. Is it as challenging as I can imagine it being?
Well, there's just so much going on. You know, my inbox, let me see. Since we've started talking, I've already gotten one email from a vendor cold reaching out to me to tell me about the wonderful product that is going to change some workflow of some team that we have. And I think it's one of the things is that in order to really kind of identify what works in your environment for your firm is that you have to know what your environment in your firm does. And so it's one of the things that we need to be careful that we don't lose sight of is that we are a confederation of practice areas and of individual attorneys. You know, we have 100+ individual owners of the firm who, you know, literally when you let's say we have 100 100 partners, equity partners, every time we spend a dollar, I'm taking a penny out of each of those partners' pockets, right? So you kind of got to think of it as you are a steward of the firm. You are responsible to all of these owners. At the same time, as the saying goes, if you were to ask all the attorneys, you know, what they want, they would just want, you know, a faster, bigger product of what they've already got, right? Yeah. And being able to kind of identify here is where the attorneys are working. Here's what they are working on. Here are their pain points. And you do that not by talking to them, but by listening to them and listening to the workflow. And, you know, I can give a prime example. I've worked recently with our immigration group. Our immigration group does a lot of flat fee work where, you know, they take on an EB-5 or another immigration process. And it's understanding that process. So sitting down with them and walking through that, and then identifying, it's like, you know, it's in this part where we have to, you know, you've got a scientist that wants to immigrate, and now you've got to be able to pull all of her papers and put those into a documentation that's going to be presented to a judge or to, you know, this part of the process. And here's where we're spending all of our time. Yeah. Everyone hates this part, but we need to do it. We don't want to really charge extra for it. So what can we do to speed this, you know, improve this process, whether it's speed it up, whether it's automate it, whether it is outsource it. And so it's not, technology isn't necessarily the answer to everything.
Yeah, 100%.
And by understanding the process and understanding the pain points and understanding the business under it, you know, it's like, you know, I guess this is the quiet part out loud. You don't want to necessarily automate all of your attorneys away, right?
No, 100%. Because I think, it's interesting. So I am going to talk about Autologics a little bit, because that's the kind of world that we sort of sit in. We get asked to look at opportunities, and sometimes we get called up inbounds, and sometimes I might put a call into you, and you'll then sort of understand, or somebody like you, you'll understand what we do, and then we'll get a challenge like that. And I think what's often missing is that combination of the understanding of the business, and sometimes I refer to that to the culture of that business as much as the understanding of the business unit and what's happening and the dynamics and politics that goes in there.
Right.
Then it's the process. And the process is the really, because nobody likes process. Process is hard. Process is data. Process is, it's horrible.
It's boring.
That's welcome to my life. Welcome to my life. But you sort of, you look at it, and then sometimes we sort of, we'll sit down and we'll do an hour's workshop. We'll sort of sit with the team, just like you just described. We're like, actually, you don't need us. You need to do this bit. And then you might benefit from us further down the line. But actually, if you do this bit, that's going to save you money. And I very rarely sit there and tell people not to buy us, but it has happened, because sometimes that's sort of, it's about building sort of that trust and that relationship to then lead on to, actually, I could have sold them a bit of tech, but, you know, that's not going to benefit. They're going to see through that pretty quickly as we go through that process. But I think there's a lot of firms that are recruiting in to positions inside of your kind of organization. And I think there's a gap of what, and it depends on the size of the firm as well, but they understand, they're experts, they're good at their tech, they're good at knowledge, whatever it might be, their sphere of expertise. But I don't think there's enough business nous shared, if that makes sense. Oftentimes I talk to people and they go, I've got no idea what this practice group wants, really. I've got no idea what they need. I've spoken to a couple of PSLs or knowledge lawyers, but actually I don't really understand their workflows and I don't understand the politics behind it. And it's like, instead of not knowing, that's probably one of the most important parts of,
you're answering your own question. It's like, you know, it's like, I don't know what they do well. There's your problem. Go find out what they do. And again, it's not necessarily a technology answer. Typically it can be. The other thing that we've found exciting is with the hype around artificial intelligence. And I talk a lot about this on the podcast, is that it opens that conversation at where they may come in and think that AI is going to be the tool that needs to, you know, and it always starts off like this. I think ChatGPT can handle this part of the work. And you can look at it and you go, well, no, that's not really what it's designed for. But this tool that we bought you 3 years ago for this very issue, if you were to implement it the way that we had suggested when we bought it and spent, you know, six figures on it, if we were to implement this in a way that goes into your workflow, that will solve 95% of your problems. And that you know, you say it in a much nicer way, kinder, gentler way. But you know, the nice thing is, but now we're having those conversations, and don't let those, you know, don't let, you know, the opportunity to have a good conversation about what the pain points are that, that your members of your firm are having go to waste. And this just really opens the door to those conversations.
And I think that that's a really good point. You sort of made a point of like listening more than talking. I'm often guilty of doing the opposite. But I think there is a massive opportunity where you now have got your lawyers engaged in technology through the right kind of use case or otherwise. It does provide you that sort of scope of actually going, no, but did you know about this? Or no, but we're already thinking about this. Or, and I think that's the kind of thing that, I mean, I take the mickey out of client generative AI sometimes. I talk derogatory about it because there is so much noise. But the noise, the potential with inside of a firm must be equally noisy, but equally valuable, because you can then, as to your point, is understand, okay, well, he cares about, he or she has gone to the internet to find a problem, a solution to a problem they've currently got. Right. Now, do we have a solution to that? Did we know about that problem? What can we do? And that must be really, really rewarding in terms of that kind of stuff and fostering that kind of engagement.
Yeah, any time that, and you have to be open to it. You can't be like an attorney with their client and then come to them with an answer and then start looking for the problem. You have to flip that script. You have sit back, discuss it, figure out where it is that they're having an issue, and then be open to any ideas that might solve the problem. Yeah. And again, it might be adding a person. It might be redirecting work to another group, or it may be a technology. But you can't come in with the answer. And I think it's one of the things that drive law firm clients insane. And it's really interesting. This is a little bit off topic, but I've gone to conferences or gatherings where it's mostly been client side. And I look and there's almost no law firm attorneys at these conferences. And it drives me crazy because I listen to what it is that the clients don't like about the attorneys. And that is the attorney wants to give me the answer that I can be perfect, you know, that this will take my risks down to zero. And I don't want that answer. What I want to know is if I do this, what's my risk level?
Yeah.
And is that level acceptable? And so, you know, it might be one of those things where it's like, I don't want perfect. What I want is good enough. And that way I can continue my business. Because if I were to implement all these steps that this attorney wants me to do, all of my profit goes away, or it slows things down so much, or it means I can't be, I can't do business in this, in this area. And I think it's the same thing for what we do with the attorneys is, we may want to go in and say, oh yeah, this, you know, this will do everything that you need. And they're like, yeah, but I don't need to be doing all of that. I just need to be doing this one thing here, and I need to be doing that better. And so I think that's one of the things that, you know, we need to not be like our attorneys and come with an answer, but rather come with questions and come with our ears to and suggestions after we've listened rather than before we've listened.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's an interesting point you make about going to conferences and sort of hearing clients of law firms talking without the lawyers being present. It's sort of, it's that meet your clients where they are. And sort of for a team like yours, you're going out to the practice, you're going out to the offices, you're understanding what they're doing, you're trying to sort of drive those kind of those things. And it's sort of it's an interesting dynamic, I guess.
Yeah.
Question for you in terms of sort of the types of trends. So going back to sort of the three geeks and the geek in review kind of world, everyone does this. I can't remember if you guys do it, but I'm going to ask you for the things that, what are the three things that you've seen this year that sort of you were completely unexpected? So I know you sort of, you engage with vendors, you talk to industry people, you talk to a whole bunch of sort of a range of different things. Is there something that's hit you completely side on this year that's gone, wow, I didn't really expect that? And I didn't prep you for this, so I apologize. And
No. That's a good question though. I would say, and a lot of this may be more recency than relevancy.
Yeah.
But like yesterday, I saw that Thomson Reuters, and I knew that they had an acquisition a few weeks ago of a product that developed their own custom or proprietary large language models.
Yeah.
And so when they bought that, I thought, are they going to do their own proprietary LLMs? And then yesterday they announced, yes, we actually are going to do that. So I think right now we're in a little bit of a data desert. And what I mean by that is the LLMs, the OpenAIs, the Geminis, the Anthropics are all kind of as big as they're probably going to get. I think now we're going to see where the true innovation comes in as far as practical. How do we get beyond just pouring more and more language into a system? Mm-hmm. And I think you've seen it on chain of thought kind of algorithms on producing output in a different way. Agents are a big thing, but one of the things that's kind of typical, if you look at trends in the industry, especially with startups, and you can use a startup like Lex Machina, for example. You can use an example like CoCounsel, with Pablo and Jake and Laura and that team. Here's the typical trend is you can get so big, it's so fast with great ideas, and then you're going to run into the problem of data, in that now in order for us to expand, we're going to either need to raise $50 million to buy the data that we need, or we're at a point where we need to be acquired by someone who's already got the data. Think this is one of the things that I think we're getting to that point now. And I don't think that the CoCounsel buy from TR last year was about data. I think that was more about getting in the race and leapfrogging the competition. But I think you're going to start seeing a lot more small startups getting acquired into larger companies now, because they've hit that data limit. Seeing TR yesterday come out and announce that they're looking at creating specialty large language models. I actually heard small language model used yesterday. I'm not sure if that's a real thing, but it sounds cool. I think that's one of the big areas that I think we're now at a point where we're really truly going to see the ingenuity of how do we actually get past just the output that a large language model does, and how do we manipulate that information so that the output that we get is better than what the output of just the LLM can do itself. So I I think that's one big area. Let me think what else is going on. Let me flip it on you while I'm thinking. You know, what's one of the big things that's kind of shocked you this year?
So I've got a funny answer and I got an actual real answer. So, the first answer is I drank ranch water for the first time in Nashville, and that shocked me because it was A, delicious, and B, it was like drinking water, good for my complexion, and
gives you a nice buzz at the same time, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's the first answer. I guess the second answer is related to you. So here at Autologics, we care about data because to enable process at scale, you have to really have a handle of your data and understand what you've got and what you can do. So we've sort of seen quite a lot of people go off and sort of explore what's going on. A lot of really bleeding edge people going out, like Avishal Goddard, going out and really sort of pushing the boundaries of what these technologies can do, how they're going to adopt them, what they're thinking about. And I think that conversation of data and the point of where is the data? What can we do with the data? How do we store that data? How do we transform it? And how do we think about those things? That's driven a lot of people to pause now. So I think what you're seeing is what you said is exactly right, is that we're at that inflection point whereby people are either going to go and find some data, create some data, or understand what data they've actually already got inside of the firm and try and find a way of leveraging it and sort of understanding that. And I think that's only good for the industry. Sort of, I don't know, I can remember when Foundation came out and the idea of bringing together collections of data to drive insights and business decisions and everything else, it wasn't new, but it was quite one of the first times people had actually sat back and gone, right, we're going to bring data in from all these different places and we're going to create this thing and we're going to do this stuff. And I think that was the sort of the starting point that I see in sort of people's journey. But it's only since Gen AI have people, when I say people, I mean firms, really sat back and thought, shit, I need to get our data sorted. I need to have a strategy around what we've got, how we've got it, whether we can use it, what restrictions we've got under it, and how can we integrate into our business workflows. And I think the thing that I think will be interesting is firms sort of getting over that sort of data challenge. And we're going to see this journey for another. I sort of sit back and look at what's happening with Gen AI and everything else, almost sort of triggered by sort of the origins of Kira. And sort of you look at sort of the adoption of Kira and tools like Kira and driving that kind of AI is going to change this and do that and everything else. Actually, it was still a real challenge to embed it inside of people's workflows. It was a real problem to get it inside of processes. And I think that giving somebody a chat interface to go and chat to a large language model isn't embedding it into somebody's workflow. It's creating an opportunity to engage with it, but it's not creating that thing. And I think that the data is going to drive a lot of the access to the data is going to drive a lot of things and decisions and everything else. The bit after that is how you then embed it into your processes. So it's like, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to do with it? Do you need to know that it's generative AI that's going to give you the thing? It's like, you don't need to know that. So that's what I think it is. But ranch water is the most important.
Yeah, I would say ranch water, definitely a big thing here. while you were talking, I did think of one other thing that kind of surprised me this year, is that I've defended big company, big legal information companies this year a lot more than I thought I would. And so, you know, I think it had started probably with the Stanford report that came out that basically tried to evaluate how legal research tools were handling legal research. And here's one thing that I also want to kind of step back and say is using generative AI to handle legal research is probably one of the hardest things that you could actually do with generative AI. And it was like the very first thing that everyone thought of. And, you know, I'm here to tell you, it's very hard. And it is a process that we're learning. I actually feel kind of lucky. And this is one of the reasons why I kind of defend the Westlaws and Lexis's and Harvey's and others, VLex and all of those of the world, is that in our normal environment, none of these tools would actually be available yet because they would still be working to make them perfect on the back end.
Yeah.
And so, you know, take the good with the bad, and also understand that these are private businesses. These are not some kind of government entity. And so there's this expectation, and I'm not saying that people are wrong, but I think the expectation that they have may be a little misguided in the fact that they think that there is that they deserve a transparency from these private companies on understanding how on the back end everything works, and I'll break it to you, they don't even know how it works sometimes. And so it's brand new, and the thing that I like and I think there should be some kind of benchmarking out there that's done by an independent third party. I don't know who that is. I know there's a couple that are out there that are looking. But you know, to have an expectation that Thomson Reuters or Relix or Wolters Kluwer or VLex or any of these companies are just going to like pull the curtain back and let you take a look at everything that they're doing and be able to publish the results. It's not going to happen. No. You know, I think that starting that off as your argument is a losing argument to begin with. But that's, you know, just me.
No,
I may lose followers for this.
I mean, or we might gain. It might be so controversial that we both become sort of infamous or something like that. I think, but it's interesting. I think that you're right, because sort of you don't really, nobody ever questioned how Workshare Compare or one of the old redlining tools produced a redline. You didn't sit there and go, yeah. Well, what's the code that's driving that? Where is that? And now there's this expectation around transparency because the technology was launched in a consumer kind of environment. So it's like, right. Oh, I can do this. I can play with this on my own PC. Now it's in my work environment and I need to know, but everything is changing so rapidly. Everything's changing so quickly that these firms aren't keeping up with themselves. They're always sort of front running on where they're going. And I think it is a real challenge for the industry because we are running at pace. And I think it comes back to that kind of conversation and another sort of you build a product, you build a service, whether it's got data behind it or otherwise, it's LLM orientated or otherwise, it doesn't really matter. But you get to a point and then you need to make decisions as the organization say, right, how are we going to scale? Do we want to scale? It's like, if we do want to scale, do we take money? Do we go to a sort of a direct sale, a sort of a within industry sale or something like that? And it's like, you've got to make these conversations so that you can keep up with the expectations of what you've built and what you've been going through and everything else. And I think it is a bit of a challenge. You've got so many small organizations running really lean, solving really important big problems. And it's great for the industry. It really is. I mean, there's so many good people.
It really is. I mean, what a fantastic time to be working in this industry. I mean, it's, you know, we had talked about change. You know, I was looking at, you know, the change in how we've done things over the past. And I started off in around 97 or so after I graduated law school. And, you know, you think of the, you know, the Y2K, the .com era for law firms. It was the, in the US, it was the, Anderson consulting firm folding, and so many knowledge management people coming into the legal industry, introducing knowledge management concepts. And you had this kind of big boom up until 2008, you know, and just massive increases in size of firms. And then, of course, the economic downturn, 2008 to 2012, so many talented attorneys and others on the sidelines for so many years that kind of came in on the operation side during that time to teach us more of the business side of things. You had the cloud introduced through the mid 2010s. And then, you know, of course, then you had the pandemic and realizing that all what the cloud enabled us to do was to go remote literally overnight. And now we're in the AI period. I'm sure I missed a number of challenges.
What you've just done is you've made me feel really young and old at the same time. You've concertinaed everything into
All of this gray hair. I looked more like you just last year. So. November of 2022, you know, I had much more brown hair. AI has made me gray.
Yeah. It's all the vendor's fault for sending you 100 emails.
I've only gotten one more email about how AI is going to change my life.
There you go, two and a half. That's not too bad.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Greg, I've got one more question for you. Two more questions for you. You were on Twitter for a long time, X or whatever it's called now. Are you part of the groups people that have quite gone over to Blue Sky? What do you find different about Blue Sky that's interesting? What's out there?
Yeah, and look, I was a big Twitter person. I've got like 12,000 followers, although I think half of them think that I'm Adam Lambert, to the new frontman for Queen. And there's a whole story behind that. Even before Elon Musk bought Twitter, it was kind of a political cesspool.
Yeah.
And no matter where you kind of landed, it was, you know, people had gotten into their tribes and their, you know, and kind of locked themselves in, and everything was a battle. And one of the things that I really liked about early Twitter was it was a place to share ideas, right? It was a place I used it a lot just to kind of, hey, here's what I'm reading. This is really cool. You should read this too. Mm-hmm. And so I did, And I've actually been on Blue Sky now for probably a year or so, but there's been a big movement in the last few weeks. I think there was something earlier in November that happened that caused a lot of people to move over. I think what it's got right now is that early Twitter feel. I used to use TweetDeck. When Musk bought Twitter, one of the first things he shut down was free access to TweetDeck, and I wasn't going to pay $8 a month to be on X. So I just kind of gave it up. But there is, if you go to deck.blue.
Okay.
There's a TweetDeck style interface for Blue Sky. You have to go in and you kind of need to be a little techie with it. Once you get it set up, I think it works a lot like TweetDeck did. And that makes the environment a lot easier for me. Yeah. There's a good growing community there. we'll see. Does it, you know, fall into the same trap as everyone else does?
It's going to become in quite. I mean, I loved Twitter in the early days. It was sort of I was like a lowly BA in a big project team for a law firm, and I was having conversations with one of our clients' GCs. Unbeknownst to me, he was one of our clients. You know, and we were just talking about sort of stuff, and you sort of think it enabled those kind of connections and everything else.
Yeah.
My last question is Thanksgiving towards the end of the week. Two sides that go with your Thanksgiving dinner. What are they?
Ooh. So I am a big white bread stuffing person.
Cool.
And I do like mac and cheese, but I would say probably, you know, a green bean salad, a green bean casserole.
Okay.
I love a good green bean casserole. Now we're going to my mother-in-law's in Oklahoma, which is an annual tradition. We all meet up there. The thing that I still like is that she sets out an olive and pickle plate early in the day and tells everyone not to touch it. And of course everyone like immediately, and I'll walk around with five black olives on my fingers and eat them off.
I want a picture of that.
I will post it on Blue Sky.
Cool.
Let's see if awesome.
I will try and be technical enough to get into Blue Sky and try and work out what goes on.
Good luck.
Greg, you're an absolute legend. Thank you very much for your time. It's always a pleasure to chat. You know, I think we probably could have chatted for another couple of hours, but nobody wants to see my face for that long. So that's not a good thing. Thank you very much. Enjoy the long weekend. Take it easy and keep safe, keep well. And I'll catch you very soon.
All right. Cheers, thanks, buddy. Man.
Take it easy. Bye.